This is Paul.
And I am Andrew.
Welcome, guys. It's, you know, we've been on a little bit of a hiatus here recently. In fact, last week was Andrew's birthday, and we celebrated it by standing him up for funny books.
It's really the gift that just keeps on giving. It's hard to move on.
Showed up on that Saturday morning.
I feel really bad. I do. I feel really bad about it, Andrew, and I want to take this opportunity to make a public apology.
Well,
because Paul and I had the conversation with I forget what our reasons were, but we weren't going to record on Saturday. And he's like, yeah, you know, Wayne's not going to be able to join. And we both said, yeah, and it doesn't sound like Andrew is going to be able to join. When in fact, Andrew had said nothing about not joining.
But no, and in fact, there'd even been a comment. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, Paul and I both had it in our heads that you were not coming on Saturday, so we didn't need to send out the usual note talking about the schedule. We just went about our business.
Because there had even been discussion about who had watched Ms. Marvel leading up to that episode. Right. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to watch Ms. Marvel before Saturday.
I do feel really bad.
That's okay.
Happy birthday, Andrew.
Well, thank you. I never thought I'd make it to 21, but here I am. I can legally drink now. Very excited.
In my head, I had this picture of Andrew standing out on the curb waiting for his friends to pull up for his birthday celebration. And the sun sets and Andrew's still out there on the curb.
He just sat in front of his – what did you do for your birthday, Andrew? Oh, I sat in front of the computer all day.
Waiting for Aaron and Paul to show up.
I had made a list of what I was going to do on my birthday the day before on Friday. And the very first thing was record with my friends. And then number two was walk the dog.
Well, I feel really bad.
Do you, Aaron?
I think he does.
I do. I feel really bad about that.
I feel like there's a statute of limitations on the level of bad that I feel in certain things. Like that. I mean, don't get me wrong. I felt bad in the moment.
You know,
like a week later, I'm over it.
Paul, I'm calling bullshit right now. Right now. Because every time I complain to you about some in some way you have hurt me. You know, every time I make you aware of that, you're fine. I'm like, no, Paul, my feelings. Not you're fine.
You're fine.
Yeah.
He's not wrong.
That is exactly how, I mean, if you want some inside baseball, this is it. Paul has no conscience. No. He has no empathy. You're fine.
And then Aaron, after he tells you you're fine, do you actually feel fine?
No.
Yeah. I didn't think so. I didn't think that would work.
In fact, you can hear the echo of my sorrow and pain.
Very Scientologist way of living life. You're fine. It's all in your head.
I was going to say a little more Ayn Rand, but sure.
Even better.
Yeah. So pity me, dear listener. Paul Aponte, my best friend, soulless bastard. Just saying.
I'm sure we're paying for something we did in a past life, Aaron.
Oh yeah. Your karma is a bitch. Just saying. Yeah.
It's kind of like what they always say. Well, you know, you're gonna have a kid someday, and they're gonna pay you back for what you did as a kid.
Except mine was someday you'll have a Paul. You know.
Yeah. What friend did you mistreat when you were a kid, Aaron?
I his name is Jamie Kermser, and I feel really bad about it.
And see, you're still mistreating friend. Look at Andrew, just sitting in front of his computer.
Well, you know, speaking of tragedy, Tim Sale passed away this week.
He did.
This has been a rough year on artists. Yeah, it does. I hadn't heard anything about a health concern or anything like that. And maybe they were just keeping something private, but golly, that it just, you know, George Perez and now Tim Sale, it's just eating me alive, man.
Yeah, and Mark Wolfman, right? I mean,
and that was Neil Adams. That was just,
and Neil Adams.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It does kind of seem like it came out of nowhere. And of course, you know, his work on Batman was amazing.
Long Halloween.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you know, all the work that he did with Jeff Loeb over the years and, you know, Tim Sale, and I mean, his work is relatively iconic. I mean, it inspired the Dark Knight movie and a lot of things that, you know, what informs Batman in cinema now is a lot from what Tim Sale and Jeff Loeb did.
Yeah, and you know, that partnership between the two, I mean, there was a while there that they could do no wrong, right?
Right.
I mean, everything they did, Hulk Gray, Spider-Man Blue, you know, their work for Marvel, certainly their work for DC Comics. I mean, it was just insane the gigantic, iconic stories those two told together. And I just love Tim Sale's work. There is something so clean and pure about his work on Superman for All Seasons. I deeply love that.
It's amazing.
I feel like that's one I need to revisit. It's been a long time since I've read that book.
Well, you know, and what's so funny, not funny, but so unique, I should say, is his work on The Long Halloween is haunting, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it is moody, it's dark, it's scary in places. And then you go on the complete flip side of that to Superman for All Seasons, and it is so bright and hopeful. Like Superman. Mm-hmm. I love the dichotomy between those two stories and how Tim Sale, you know, is the artist for both of them. I mean, it's amazing to me the breadth and scope of his talent. And I hate that he's gone.
Yeah. I had never read Superman for All Seasons until about, I want to say, 6 years ago when my good mm-hmm. friend Aaron gave me his physical copies, I guess, as you were moving to digital. And I've probably read it maybe three. It's kind of like once a year, once every other year, I pull it out and reread it.
It's a great story. Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, tragedy, certainly another big loss for comic books. It seems like there's been quite a few in the last 6 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, while we're talking about it, I just looked Superman for All Seasons. If you read your comics digitally, it's $9.99. Or if you have a Comixology Unlimited membership, it's $8.99. So I just picked it up. I'm going to revisit it this weekend.
It's a great
book. Even though I've got a read pile that's probably about 10 gigs big.
right.
I'm going to reread that book.
Okay. Hey, not on the outline, but definitely from the read pile, I have burned through the Black Hammer book from Jeff Lemire.
Yeah, you've been talking a lot about that lately.
Fantastic.
You've been tweeting about it, but tell me more about it. Like, what's it even about?
Yeah.
Well, it is clearly his take on the Justice League, and it is a situation in which in dark. Dark Horse, you know, non-DC Comics language, but really telling the story of a Justice League-like team that fights Darkseid and a Darkseid-like villain. In this book, he's called Anti-God. And they save the world, but when the smoke clears, they're gone. And they find themselves on a farm and in this town, and they can't leave the perimeter of the town. That one of them who did the Black Hammer dies, and so they're trapped within this bubble of a town, and you know, trying to lead their secret identity lives there. And you know, they're all very different. You've got a Martian Manhunter like character, you know, and in addition to him being the ultimate outsider as an alien, he is also gay. And every time he tries to connect with somebody, he is rejected. You know, the first time is in his secret identity as a cop before the you know, the big crisis event. He thinks that his, cop partner is, you know, like himself, you know, thinks that he is also gay, and he, you know, puts his hand on his knee, and the next thing you know, he's rejected, he's, you know, outed with the police force. He winds up, you know, quitting the police force and becoming a private detective, and just becomes more and more insular. One of the characters is a Shazam riff, and instead of it being Billy Batson, it's a woman who has the powers, but instead of her you know, going from child to man or child to woman, child to adult in the Shazam transformation, she goes from woman to little girl with superpowers.
Huh.
And so when she is transported to the farm, she is stuck in her 9-year-old girl persona and doesn't age. And so she's, you know, in order to preserve the identity, she has to go to school. And so here she is, cigarette smoking, drinking gin, having to go to elementary school in order to preserve her identity. And I mean, it's super interesting. You've got a Captain America like figure, and he's really only the only sort of Marvel sort of character in this, you know, and he's the guy who's happy to be on the farm. You know, he's satisfied being here. But you know, everybody else is, you know, no, you've got a witch type person. It spawns off into some side stories. You've got an android. I mean, it's just this terrific story. And are they stuck in purgatory, or are they some sort of afterlife? Has a villain set them up like this? And it's them solving that mystery. And I can't get over how good it is. And I'd always heard it was good, but I'd never heard a pitch that told me what it was about to make me get into it.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the beauties of having sick time, you know, I was out for a surgery on my foot last week, and I had a whole lot of time on my hands. And so I started getting into my read pile, and man, Black Hammer is a good book. And I bought the first library edition, which I think, you know, has like the first 12 issues. And so I bought the second volume of the library edition, which has the other half of the series. I'm just really digging it. I highly recommend it. And they have got just some terrific variant covers in there that I'm just really getting a big kick out of. There's some Fred Hembeck in there, Scott Collins, others. It's just terrific stuff.
You said Jeff Lemire wrote it?
Yeah.
Sounds good. That's a heck of a pitch.
I got to tell you, I love the, you know, it reminds me of Crossover in a lot of ways, you know, because it's taking sort of these comic book, you know, icon sort of, you know, archetypes, right? And putting them in different kinds of stories. And I just, it's just a super fun book. It is interesting. It's poignant at times. It's got a lot to say, and I just dig the hell out of it.
Well, so, I'm looking it up to see how much it is right now, but go on.
But I am certain that we will see many more poignant stories in the news that we heard this week that Planet of the Apes is coming over to Marvel Comics. And we're going to I believe the banner on that is going to be Marvel Monkey Books. I'm actually pretty excited about this. I think, you know, what was it? IDW that was doing the Planet of the Apes books.
Damn, what's it? I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, IDW. Boom? Maybe it was Boom. It was Boom Studios.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I think Boom did mostly a good job on the Planet of the Apes books, but what I'd really like to see is less team up books and more, you know, because they got into a spiral where it was Legion of Superheroes meets, you know, Planet of the Apes, the Green Lanterns meet Planet of the Apes, Star Trek meets Planet of the Apes.
Right.
I'm Tarzan. Less interested.
The Tarzan one was good.
Yeah. But I'm less interested in that kind of storytelling as I am. And let's just tell some monkey book stories, yeah. You know?
I mean, the plot probably suggests itself more when you mix these two things, because you have the, well, what would happen? And you put that on the paper. I think it probably is harder for them to come up with original storylines contained within, you know, the Planet of the Apes world.
Mm-hmm.
I would think.
You know, it's certainly difficult when you look at how there's an ending to the Planet of the Apes stories in the classic setting, right? Because, you know, apparently the world blows up at the end of Beneath Planet of the Apes. But I do think there's some opportunities to tell some stories there. Plus, there's opportunities to tell, you know, I think you can do different, you know, eras of Planet of the Apes. But I just hope they really tackle it with the same level of gusto that they tackled Conan. You know, I'd like this.
Right?
Yeah, I just really want to see top talent working these books, telling terrific stories. And maybe they'll win me over with an X-Men meet Planet of the Apes. I doubt it. But
you could do Logan in the Planet of the Apes.
How about Kassar in Planet of the Apes?
Well, and what about mutant apes? Just saying.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, the art they have, you know, some preview art done by Salvador LaRocca, or maybe it's just an announcement. I don't know that he's on the title or something like that, but it's pretty hot. And it, you know, it harkens back to, you know, original Planet of the Apes, not necessarily the rebooted continuity that they did in the movies, which were great movies, but, you know, certainly don't lend themselves to comic storytelling.
Well, I'm gonna throw it out here now. Just, you know, remember you heard it here first. To me, my ex-monkeys.
You know, I think looking at how they treated Conan will probably be very telling of how they're gonna treat Planet of the Apes. And you know, having read some. I mean, yes and no. I mean, they put out a lot of Conan, right? Some of it was good. Some of it was not good. Some of it was a little misleading, right? So I expect we'll get some good Planet of the Monkey, Planet of the Apes books. But I was so many monkeys. But I think we'll probably get some chaff too, right?
If we don't have Hitmonkey in that book, I'm going to be very disappointed.
Well, you know, there's got to be, you know, there's got to be a lot of the monkey heroes and villains appear in the Planet of the Apes books. But, you know, what I'm saying is, you know, Jason Aaron, love him or not, he's Marvel top talent. And that's what I want to see on this book. I want to see top. And I got to tell you, the first arc that Jason Aaron did on Conan was great.
Yeah.
I very much enjoyed that. And that's what I want to see on the Planet of the Apes.
Jason Aaron is a great first arc writer.
Even second arc sometimes, depending on the book we're talking about.
Second arc, generally.
But never third. Third is right out.
Yeah. Give him 12 issues and then kick him out. That's right. The Jason Aaron maneuver.
That's right.
Speaking of monkeys, have they announced a season 2 release for Hitmonkey?
Not that I have heard. You're talking about the Hulu show?
Yeah.
Yeah, not that I've heard.
That show's so good.
Ooh.
I was overwhelmed.
I never saw it. I got the same reason I haven't seen Ms. Marvel yet. There's just too much television.
There is a lot of TV, but Hitmonkey, really good.
Still haven't gotten to Umbrella Academy.
Nah, neither have I. No.
I have not finished Doom Patrol yet either.
No, jeez. No. Yeah. I keep ordering more stuff too, so you know, I got season 1 of American Gods I just ordered last night, because like I always wanted to watch it, and you know, I don't have Stars, so I saw it cheap on Blu-ray, so I picked it up.
Well, at least I don't know if it's still there, but last night I was looking at Amazon Prime. Now, I did not see it because I ended up watching Spiderhead, which with Chris Hemsworth and Miles Teller. But I saw that The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent was 50% off on Amazon Prime. So it was $9.99. So I am looking forward to watching that.
I am planning on watching that when it is free $99.
Or $9.99 was fine. The problem is when I buy something, it usually ends up being free the next week.
Yes.
That's right. Yeah.
I'm holding off on Morbius.
That's Paul Ponte style right there.
I got to tell you, the one that I'm really eager to see is Everything.
Oh, yeah.
Everything Everywhere All at Once. What is that called? Everything that looks so good.
That's not Ma. No, what's her name?
Michelle Yeoh.
Thank you.
Michelle Yeoh. Yeah. God, that looks good.
Yeah, I'm waiting until that one goes on sale or becomes free.
Same. Yeah, same. Definitely. I didn't get to catch it in the theaters, and boy, it looks just super good.
Yeah.
So. But you know, Paul, something else that looked like it might be good, but I got to tell you, I don't believe it is. DC's Dark Crisis. Oh, how I hated this book.
Yeah, this first issue was a stinker. From Joshua Williamson and Daniel Semperi. Now, I will say, none of my issues with this book were the art.
I think
Semperi, he very much has a Jason Fabok style to his art. Strong. I mean, and this book certainly pushed him to his limits. I mean, multiple 2-page spreads with dozens, if not hundreds, of characters. Beautifully rendered. Yep. Yeah, loved it. Loved the art. The story though was pretty terrible. And
there were times where you thought, okay, this is going to be like the opening page with, you know, Bruce swearing in Dick as Robin, you know. Yeah. With the candlelight and whatnot. I'm like, and you know, to your point, it's the visual storytelling that's working, not the written narrative, you know. And same with the following splash page with all the heroes, you know, once and today. The memorial service was terrific.
Yeah, but really, up until the title page. I enjoyed it. And then the title page occurs, and then, you know, the Jonathan Kent trying to reform a new Justice League, you know, everyone's saying no. And so he basically comes up with the world's shittiest Justice League that he can put together. and then basically, like, it ends up not being a thing. So I think there are a lot of interesting elements to the book, like Deathstroke storming Titan's Tower. But I felt for what it's worth, I like that idea. Like, okay, Deathstroke has now stood up in the absence of the heroes, and he's like, I'm just going to kill everybody. I think, you know, in the preview art, we've certainly seen that we're going to see some Dick Grayson versus Deathstroke battles, at least as we get into issue two. And that part intrigues me. But what bugged me about that scene specifically is Deathstroke saying, in the past, the Titans would have the Justice League to protect them, to bail them out when things got too hot. But the Justice League is not coming this time or ever again. And I'm like, when has that actually happened as it relates to Deathstroke? The Titans have always stood on their own. And so that, you know, there were some elements of the book that really bugged me. Obviously, at the end of the book, you find out that the Justice League are not dead. Shocker. They're just kind of trapped in their own multiverses. It definitely rang at inconsequential, ultimately. Like, I think we're going to end this series. Maybe Beast Boy died, but probably not. I think we'll end this series with maybe one or two minor character deaths, and then it's over, right? Everyone's back, and everything's back to status quo.
Well, I was grossly disappointed in the quality of the narrative in this book. And I got to tell you, you know, the scene with, you know, Super... where Jonathan, you know, son of Kal-El, pulls together his new Justice League and that it all falls apart on him just seemed really derivative of Watchmen, right? It really bugged me. And I will tell you that, yeah, it's a curious team he's put together, but I was kind of there for it. You know, I was like, I like the idea of Superman and Supergirl being on the same team. I like the idea of you know, the Frankenstein's monster being on the team. Less enthused about Harley Quinn, but you got Booster and Beetle and that other Beetle. You know, I just it was an interesting team, and I was there for it. And, you know, hopefully we'll get to see some of it.
So are you? So Andrew, did you? No, you didn't read Dark Crisis because there's no DC DC app that you read comics on.
You are so smart.
So Aaron, here's the question though. Was there enough to draw you in for issue two?
I will need to look.
Yeah, I probably will, just to see, because, you know, there's some preview at the back of the book just briefly that shows that Dick Grayson versus Deathstroke stuff.
Uh-huh.
So I will probably pick it up just to see the Dick Grayson versus Deathstroke battle. But what's frustrating to me is, for a book that is supposedly as important as it is, how far removed from continuity it is. And that you know, they very much are trying to make this an insular thing, right? That you, if you look at the back, there's very few tie-ins. You know, there's like a mini series about World Without a Justice League, and then a couple of issues of Flash, and that's really it. You know, for a book that, you know, when you think about some of the other you know, big crossover events, they've certainly injected more into the monthly titles. But you know, you can pick up Batman right now. Bruce Wayne's fine. You can pick up Superman right now. And, you know, Clark, well, not Superman, but you can pick up Action Comics and Clark Kent is still on War World. Right. So, you know, the fact that this is so far removed from the regular DC continuity makes it a little frustrating.
It is. But, you know, they usually have a hard time with their event books not lining up with what's going on in their regular monthly books. Sure.
I did read on Twitter that in the next issue of Dark Crisis that Catman's joining.
I'm just putting it out. Man, it's the old Catman issue, in fact.
I'm there. It's the Catman.
I hear he's going to show up to take on Deathstroke. I'm just saying, to help awesome. Dick Grayson on that battle.
Yeah.
I'm there. Well, you know, as disappointing as Dark Crisis, you know, I think it's important that we note that Flashpoint Beyond is even more disappointing.
It is weird how bad this book is.
I expect more from Jeff Johns. And I
know he's co-writing.
He is one of three writers on this book. And let me tell you, I think that his contribution to the book was, hey, we ought to do a sequel to Flashpoint. You guys run with that. I think that was his contribution, because I can't imagine that he, you know, crafted something as so poorly thought out as this book and so poorly executed. This is a 6-issue series. We are 1/3 of the way through. Issue 2 came out this week, in case you're, you know, needed help with the math. This book is terrible. This book delivers nothing on the awesome adventure and mystery and, you know, just sheer shocking value of the original Flashpoint. It is really retreading the tire.
To your point about retreading the tire, we are now 3 issues in, because there was an issue 0.
Oh, you're right.
All 3 issues have essentially told the exact same story.
Absolutely.
There has been no forward movement since issue zero. You know, Thomas Wayne Batman is still confused as to why the Flashpoint universe is back. There's a couple of teasers as to Bruce Wayne Batman having something to do with it. That is, I have described every issue that has been released.
Yeah. Yeah. And the only cool thing that happens in this book is that the Flashpoint Superman shows up and we get to see that he's filled out some.
Yeah.
And that's it. I mean, everything else, I'm like, God, this sucks. I mean,
it's sad because I was really looking forward to it. Jeff Johns, you know, he's one of my favorite comic writers of all time. But to your point, issue zero felt like a Jeff Johns.
Mm-hmm.
Issues one and two have not.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, I think that unlike Dark Crisis, I'm not picking up the next issue. I'm going to read it in the app when it hits the app 6 months from now or 3 months from now, whatever that count is, because this book is awful. And as interested as I am to catch up with the Flashpoint Superman, I just don't know that it's worth my dollars that I'm not already spending over in the DC app.
I feel like I have not missed anything by DC not having their own app, monthly app. Well,
I am stunned at how bad Flashpoint Beyond was.
Yeah.
Are either of you still reading Spider-Man, the new?
I am not, but tell me about the Spider-Man.
Paul, are you still reading it?
No, the only thing I read, I think
you
I read
the first issue. You did.
Yeah, and I didn't care for it. You know, jerk Peter. And I did read the free Comic Book Day preview that kind of hints that we've got this big Spider-Man crossover coming up with whatever Ben Reilly turned into.
And, I don't remember. Yeah, that's a Wayne question right there. He read that whole Ben Reilly Spider-Man run.
Reilly and Madeline Pryor are teaming up for a crossover called Dark Web.
Huh. Well, I will say, you know, the second and third issues of Spider-Man have come out in the interim since we read the first issue together. But it is really focused more on the gang warfare between, you know, Tombstone and the Rose. It has not really focused much so far on Jerk Peter. There's been a lot less Jerk Peter than there was in the first issue. So I got to say, you know, whether it's Marvel Unlimited or something else, sale someday. So far, the storyline of the gang warfare between those two vying factions has been pretty good.
You know, I feel if they released that book separately, I would probably pick that up. Because that was what I liked about the first issue, right? Was the Tombstone stuff. And if they released like New York Gang War or something like that, I feel like I'd probably read that.
The only kind of callback to the stuff we didn't like from the first issue so far in issues two and three has been Mary Jane's new whatever he is, I guess, new boyfriend, husband, whatever. He shows up at Peter's apartment one day. Peter's not there. He's doing superhero stuff. And he has a short conversation with the bill collector from, you know, waiting to collect the hospital bill that Peter owes from the previous run that Wayne read. And really, besides that, there's been nothing else about Jerk Peter or Aunt May being upset with him or anything else in the second and third issues.
Mm-hmm.
So again, if it's, you know, included in the price of your Marvel Unlimited app, I'd say check it out because it's been good. There was a crossover back in the, I'm going to say 90s. I think it was called Dead Man's Hand, which focused heavily on the organized crime. You know, it crossed over many issue series like Punisher, Nomad, a couple other things. And I'm getting a lot of those vibes from it. It's really good. I feel like I convinced him, Aaron. I feel like I convinced him.
I'm intrigued, but we'll see. We'll see. Because issue four comes out next week.
Yes.
I'll ponder. So you're telling me that I want to hear the words.
Yes, be clear.
Issues two and three have been better than issue one.
It is the parts that we liked from issue one. So it is the quality of the gang warfare. That's a very
specific question.
It is. Well, I'm just saying, if you didn't like the gang warfare in issue one, you're not suddenly going to like the gang warfare story in issues two and three, right? Yeah. So it's not like anything happens to that story that makes it better. It just continues on.
That is the stuff that I liked.
Yes. And there is very, very little of the stuff we didn't like, which was the what did Peter do? Why does everybody have angry with him, what happened with MJ, and who are these kids. Really, there's almost none of that in issues two and three.
Okay.
Right. So issue well, for next will... week, we'll talk about it then. You'll get caught up.
Maybe, sounds maybe.
Good. Sounds we'll good.
Paul's making no commitments.
Aaron, no, Aaron, I think
that,
I want
that, to feel like a Paul thing to do.
We love you, Paul.
And remember, Andrew, next week when he you know, fails to have completed his reading assignment and you tell him that it hurts you, he'll say, you're fine.
We are going to test this next week. We're going to test this on air next week. See what happens. Oh, my goodness.
Oh. So I think that's a good transition into Obi-Wan Kenobi, because I got to tell you, after having watched the most recent episode, I kind of feel like, you know, both Obi-Wan and Darth Vader have used third sister, who I'm going to call Cindy Brady, by the way.
All right.
have used her poorly in this episode. And, you know, I feel like it, were she to say, hey, you guys have hurt my feelings, they'd say, they'd both say, you're fine.
You're fine. Let me stab her.
I got to say,
continue to stab her.
I burned through all the episodes of Obi-Wan this past week, and it is quite a lot better than Book of Boba Fett.
Oh, it is. Yeah. I will say it got better sooner. So that's one thing I will say, because Book of Boba Fett didn't really get good until I think episode 4
the last
or
two,
5.
When I was going to say last 2 or 3.
When it turned into Mandalorian.
Right.
Obi-Wan got good at episode 3, because I didn't – episode 1 was fine. Episode 2, I was like, I don't know. This is not going in the right direction. And then episode 3 knocked it out of the park, and I've enjoyed episode 4 and 5. That episode 3 was a good turning point for Obi-Wan. So, yes, to your point, Andrew, I feel like it got better sooner.
Well, even on Book of Boba Fett, when the Mandalorian shows up and he spends the episode going to look for Grogu, that is, like, the most pointless episode ever. You could have taken those 40 minutes, condensed them down to 10 minutes, and gotten the same impact. They drew it out way too long.
Well, it was fan service. You know,
I'm a fan. I don't feel serviced.
I think that there was a certain segment of the fandom that really dug that episode.
I'm that. I am that segment of the fandom.
Let me ask this question, Paul. What did you find so appealing about that episode on Luke's world?
For me, it very much had a lot of callbacks to Empire Strikes Back and Luke and Yoda's interaction, and so I appreciated that about it. It had a feel-good element to it with the Luke Skywalker-Grogu interaction. So I liked it, and I liked seeing Ahsoka. As far that, you know, to your point, it felt like we're just kind of twiddling thumbs where Mandalorian's waiting on Grogu and doesn't actually get to see him.
Right.
But, you know, I don't know. Like, I liked... I hear you, but I also liked what we did get, because
I would have liked it better if they were on Tatooine and someone, you know, whoever of the many characters there asked the Mandalorian about, oh, you know, what's the little guy doing? And, you know, he said, well, he's with his people. And then they did a fade to Luke's world and then, you know, showed that training montage and then came back to Tatooine. But him actually flying there.
Well, he had to get him his little Grogu
chainmail. His chainmail. Yes.
His little Grogu to save his life later in the show.
Yes.
Oh my God.
I saw that little Grogu chainmail in person when I was at Star Wars Celebration. It's very cute.
I was also upset that he picked the shirt over the lightsaber. I, as a parent, I feel like he's making bad decisions. but back to Obi-Wan. I agree with you, Paul. The first episode, first two episodes were a bit slow and a bit, there wasn't a lot going on. But once Third Sister shows up and Bail Organa, you know, Leia disappears and Bail Organa starts pressuring Obi-Wan, it got really good. I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, for me, I think it was the start of episode 3 where you see Darth Vader on his throne on Mustafar. I'm like, bam, yes. And since then, it has been, for me, consistently good. And, hey, you're going to get your Tatooine, because Tatooine looks like it's going to be the setting of episode 6 of Obi-Wan. But I have really, really enjoyed this show. And part 5, or episode 5, whatever, they're calling it part 5, but that's kind of confusing for me. had some clone Clone Wars, Attack of the Clones flashback type stuff.
Yeah. I've really enjoyed the that they pulled that in there. And then did you guys notice, though, in that little training montage or flashback to when, you know, Obi-Wan and Anakin are training with the lightsabers? It was quite visible that they are much older now, especially Anakin. Yeah. Looking at Anakin's face, I know they probably tried to do some CGI to kind of soften it and make him look younger, but even so, he is distinctly older than he was during that era.
So, Ian, what are you feeling about Obi-Wan?
Well, you know, when you and I talked about it last, Paul, you know, I was very critical of Third Sister. I was not wild about the performance. But I got to tell you, you know, the actor has really won me over because I felt really bad for her in this recent episode. I mean, I got to tell you, I mean, I have always maintained that Jedis are not, you know, just because you're a Jedi doesn't mean you're a good guy. I think Jedis we have seen on screen have frequently made really bad decisions. And I feel like Obi-Wan sacrifices her when there was an opportunity for both of them to take Vader on together. Now, there is no doubt in my mind that Obi-Wan made the right decision in terms of saving Leia. Right. Because I don't think that the two of them going up against Vader would have ended any differently. Right.
No.
But, you know, I just there is a mercenary quality that the camera doesn't focus on. But, you know, certainly as a viewer, you can deduce of him bringing Vader down there when he does and letting Third Sister, you know, attack him alone. I mean, I just there's no way she's going to beat Vader if Vader's not distracted, and he wasn't distracted at that moment. I felt super bad, and it strikes me as really bizarre that they left her alive.
That is weird.
That seems, I mean, you know, knowing as cold-blooded as Vader is, I don't understand why he would leave anybody alive who might otherwise come back to be troublesome at another point.
Well, maybe they're just doing the same thing Obi-Wan did to Anakin, you know, on Mustafar, where he's like,
right,
ah, he's going to die. He's going I don't have to do the finishing blow because he's going to die here. Next
he's
to the
got
lava
no legs
river.
And only one arm. He's on fire.
Yeah,
what's
right?
he going to do?
Yeah. How's he going to hurt me?
Yeah.
But, you know, I think part of that, though, was Third Sister, right? The way I read that scene is that, you know, they brought Obi-Wan out in handcuffs. They'd had their little whispered conversation. Right. And then she sent him back into the complex, mm-hmm. right? Like she motioned to her guards to take him back in. You know, if you were going to really, and she had mentioned to Obi-Wan, you know, he had said, you can't do this by yourself. And she said, you have no idea the things I have done by myself.
Right.
I almost feel like she didn't want him to be part of it. I feel like that was part of her choice that she didn't want to do it by herself and did not want to include him.
Yeah, I think that's part of it.
But, you know,
didn't work out for her.
She has trust issues.
The reveal of her having been a surviving youngling.
Yeah.
Blew my hair back.
Yeah.
I was just like, what?
That was a great bit of storytelling, that turn there. And just the way it let Obi-Wan manipulate her somewhat or influence her somewhat was amazing.
And her her lightsaber through the drop door was pretty badass. So
cool. I was wondering that while they were shooting that giant door with a big gun forever, I was like, why doesn't she just cut through with her lightsaber? Uh-huh, uh-huh. And then it happened. So that worked out, yeah.
You know, I will say the only real issue that I have with Obi-Wan Kenobi thus far, well, one, you know, in addition to the Third Sister, I thought it was nice to see Camille Nanjiani and I don't know the actor's name off the top of my head, but Ice Cube's son, to see him play a more prevalent role.
I believe it's MC Ice Cube's son.
MC Ice Cube's son, you know, to see them play a more prevalent role, because I'm like, why did you get these actors just to...
Right, if you're not going to use them.
If you're not going to use them. And then they both came back for more prevalent roles. So I was like, okay, great. Now I get it.
I do have one gripe that I didn't share. And ooh, that is the escape scene.
Yep.
So, you know, Vader comes walking in and the ship is blasting off and he force pulls it back down.
Super which was cool. Awesome. Awesome.
He then force rips off the bulkhead doors. Also cool. Sees an empty ship. And then miraculously behind it, other ship takes off.
And he doesn't force-pull that one.
Well, and I'd like to – I rewound. That other ship wasn't there.
Yeah.
That was some shenanigans, I'll say. And there was nothing in the scene that would indicate that for a clever viewer to have seen it. It's as if that other ship miraculously appeared after the action. That really bothered.
Well, as I was say, like, that was the same thing that bothered me in a different way.
Okay.
Because I noticed it in the previous episode, in episode 4, where Reva is like blocking the blasts from the A-wing, as well as in this episode with Darth Vader. I don't know if it's, you know, the camera angles or whatever, but the ships seem out of proportion to the humans. Yes.
Yeah, when like the snow speeder is floating like right next to Reva shooting at it.
Yeah, and I'm like, that seems really small.
Yeah.
Is it a smart car size or, you know, and then this thing
Mini Cooper
brings down to the ground. It felt like he was right next to it. I'm like, I don't know that thing's going to fit 50 people, maybe like 10. But, you know, I think it's they're trying to say that Vader's closer to the camera. But for me, it looks like the proportions are off.
I agree with you there. I noticed that as well with the ship just seeming to magically appear. It's you know, it's all CGI, so it seems like that's just sloppiness.
Yeah.
Yes.
That they didn't have that in the, you know, deep in the background of those previous shots.
Well, and who was in that ship that got brought down? I'm just saying, who sacrificed themselves?
That lady who was flying the snow speeder, she was so broken about Wade dying. She kind of has a death wish ever since then.
It was interesting that they included that in the previously on. Did you catch that?
Yep.
It had nothing. Yep. Otherwise, it had nothing to do with this episode. But on the previously on, they include that piece. And I'm like, at the end of it, I was like, well, why did they do that? But maybe you're right. Maybe she was the person in charge of that ship.
I think so. She was the sacrificial lamb.
Yeah. So I think overall we're enjoying Obi-Wan. We're excited and eagerly anticipating the final episode in the coming week.
Yeah.
I got to know, Andrew. Tell me what you think of Disney's latest MCU television show, Ms. Marvel.
I'm enjoying it more than I enjoyed Moon Knight. That may be a low bar to step over, but
agreed.
Yeah. You know, Ms. Marvel, I got into Ms. Marvel oddly like 3-4 years ago because she was a character in this card game, the Marvel Champions I play, and I wanted to know more about her. So I had Marvel Unlimited and I read through her entire series and then Champions and up to, you know, the current point at that issue. And I really like the character. The comic book has some issues, but I feel like they've done a fairly good job. They've actually made some adaptations to her backstory to make it more fit into the MCU with the backgrounds. You know, the original Ms. Marvel was transformed by the Terrigen Mist. Obviously, the Inhumans, Terrigen Mist aren't really a thing in the MCU. And so they went a different route. But I've really enjoyed it. I like the relationship between her and Bruno. Much like the comic book, it is more of a family drama show than it is a big bold superhero show at this point, especially but I love her supporting. I like her brother. I like her parents. I think they've been well done in this series. How about you?
I gotta tell you, you know, my experience with Kamala Khan is largely through Champions, the book, that the team book that she's been in, and I really enjoy Champions. Have not really embraced her solo series. You know, the books that I picked up on that really haven't done much for me, but I do enjoy her as part of the ensemble. So I wasn't sure what I was going to think about this, and I watched that first episode, and that first episode did not feel like it was aimed at me. It felt like it was, telling a story for a younger audience. And I was like, okay, well, that's fine. I mean, you know, one of the things I love about the MCU is that it's a story rich environment and they can tell all kinds of stories and not all of them will be for me. Right.
Right.
And so I was like, you know, it was well produced. I thought the story was well told. I like the actor. I like that it is telling a superhero story from a point of view that we have not seen in the MCU before. I think that's always interesting. I like that we're getting to see, you know, a culturally diverse Marvel Cinematic Universe, right?
Yes.
And so I really, after I watched the first episode, and again, you know, I thought that it had really good storytelling. It just wasn't a story I was too much interested in. And so after I left that first episode, I'm like, I'm not sure I'm going to watch the rest of this show. But I watched it this morning before we hopped on the mics. And I got to tell you, I really liked the second episode. The second episode really sort of opened up the storytelling.
Yeah.
And still has a very young sort of point of view to it. But, you know, as it started leaning into cultural backgrounds, historical backgrounds, I really started to appreciate the breadth and the scope of it. And I got to tell you, I almost hit pause this morning to go visit Wikipedia because I heard something in the show that I've never heard before.
What's that?
And about the partition.
You hadn't heard about the partition?
I got to tell you, you know, I toyed with being a history minor at one point.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, you know, because just about all the history I ever took was Western history.
Yeah, that was a huge, huge thing in you know, the division of Pakistan from India by the British. I mean, it is just such a traumatic experience. I mean, there's so many stories you can read about, you know, villages, you know, turning against each other, families turning against each other, you know, when they're on opposite sides of the line and all the death that resulted from it.
And don't get me wrong. I knew about that dynamic. I hadn't heard the term partition before.
Yeah.
And, you know, it reminded me of having watched Watchmen on HBO and having heard about, you know, Tulsa and Black Wall Street and how, you know, I am. You know, a 6-hour drive from Tulsa at my maybe even 4-hour drive from Tulsa. Never heard of that.
I
was never in any of my history classes, you know, it is real easy to say that, you know, history is, you know, what's taught and, you know, history is accurate when you're confronted with, wow, we have really done a pretty spectacular job of whitewashing our history. It is alarming and jarring and unsettling to know that, you know, we're not really taught, you know, or at least, you know, folks in my generation were not taught what actually happened. I mean, literally, and I know I'm going off on a tangent here. When you got the essay question in your American history test in high school about what caused the Civil War, if you answered slavery, you would fail the test, right? Because we were taught that it was about states' rights.
Well, that's a Texas thing. Well, and you're a little older than me as well. But yeah, it was a little different by the time I here when I took AP US
history.
But you know, they really wanted that kind of, well, here are, you know, the three things, and it was, you know, slavery, economics, and, you know, political power.
Slavery kind of, not a part of the equation here. And I mean, that's what's I mean, and you go through your school experience trusting the knowledge that you have that has been taught to you.
Right.
Right. I mean, even though I had a parent who taught me to question authority, at no point was I told question what you're being taught, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, as you rest on that as an adult and you're like, well, when you have to start pulling on that thread and go, no, that's not right. You know, it's unsettling. And I'm so thankful that, I'm going to come bring it back to the MCU. I am so thankful that in our entertainment, we can teach and learn about these things. And you know, here, you know, like I said, I knew the context of the history of you know, India and Pakistan, et cetera. What I didn't know was some of the terms.
Right.
And it was nice to hear it. And it was nice to hear how, the, you know, generations and generations later, that's still impacting the culture and the descendants.
Well, it wasn't that long ago, relatively speaking. I mean,
right.
This was recent history by most scales.
Right.
So, you know, I'm with you. I'd never heard of the Tulsa Massacre before The Watchmen, and that kind of sent you down a rabbit hole after having learning about it. And so it is kind of scary about – it's not that we were maybe taught – things that were wrong. It's about what we weren't taught about, what was just omitted, right? So, you know, it's maybe not
the whole story.
It's maybe not a lie, but it's a you know, a lie of omission a lot of times. And so, and part of that's what do you focus on? And I think in education, there's been a huge change in focus over the last 40 years about what to focus on when you're teaching, specifically American history. And of course, there's lots of debates out there that you can get pulled into about it. But I think it's it's a good thing to have more perspectives. And back to the MCU, you know, I can see how, and I think Wayne said the same thing, you know, that's a young adult show. And I disagree with Wayne on that. I felt
like the first episode was. I didn't feel like the second.
See, I wouldn't say it's a young adult show. It is a show about a young adult. It is the protagonist is a high school girl. Her friends, her immediate friends are high school kids. So there's going to be a lot of elements of high school life because that's what they're living. That's what is important to them. But it's not told. It's not like Boy Meets World, right? It's told in a more adult way. And as maybe what, and I think what you respond to in a second is as you pull out and include more of her family, you get more viewpoints from the older generation, from the slightly older brother, right? That scene in the diner cracked me up.
Yeah, it was a great scene.
Uncle Chaudhry from Pakistan.
Yeah, it was great.
So I am very happy that they're doing Miss Marvel. I've enjoyed her. The comic book's great. The art is the hard part to get through on the solo book, especially early on.
I agree. What I think one of the things that I enjoy a lot about this series is that, you know, Ms. Marvel is body atypical as well. You know, she is not, you know, legs up to her ears teenager. She looks like a normal teenager.
Yes.
And I get a kick out of, you know, the goofiness of the character. She's very Peter Parker-esque in this show. Young Peter Parker, not jerk Peter Parker. I really get a kick out of her. I get a kick out of her mom. I love the mystery that they've deployed about her great grandmother. There's a lot to like here, and it is super well produced.
I will say one thing I have not cared for. I understand why they did it, because it's about money and special effects. But you know, her powers in the book, comic book,
are different.
Yeah, it's more of a Mr. Fantastic body flexibility where she can get big and small and you know, do all sorts of things. And so, you know, for special effects budget, they have changed that to this force power that mimics some of those same powers, being able to extend your arm and all that stuff. And so, I mean, I'm fine with it. I'm a little sad that they made that change, but it's okay. Maybe the radiation from this gauntlet's going to give her comic book powers eventually down the road. I don't know.
That would be great.
And obviously, I think we're going to see Kamala Khan again because there's a movie coming up called The Marvels.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine she's not going to be in there.
And maybe she'll be all stretchy and bendy there.
By then, yeah. We have a much bigger effects budget on that movie. Yeah. So,
We'll see. I think Ms. Marvel has had the benefit of surprising me. Because I really groomed to the second episode. So I'm eager to see how the rest of it winds up.
And if you're not watching, especially if you're on a comic book podcast, you should probably pick it up and watch it. It's good stuff.
I'll tell Wayne.
Wayne did watch it.
We don't know that. He's not.
He did. He did say he watched it.
Hey, Paul.
Okay. Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
Well, the adventures of Jerk Peter Parker continue in Amazing Spider-Man issue 4.
Well, I'll read that. Yep.
Also from Marvel Comics, we have the first issue of the Peter David Allen Robinson New Fantastic Four book. You know, we talked a little bit about this when it was announced that they are releasing this New Fantastic Four miniseries set shortly after the events of the group's first appearance. So, you know, way back when Art Adams, and I don't remember the writer on Fantastic Four at the time. I'm not even going to conjecture or guess. It was Walt Simonson. Yes, it was Walt Simonson and Art Adams created the new Fantastic Four when the Fantastic Four were captured by the Mole Man. And it was Ghost Rider, Spider-Man, Gray Hulk, and Wolverine. And so this is a new miniseries set shortly after the events of that book coming from Marvel Comics next week. Really looking forward to that.
I'm in for that.
Same.
And, you know, speaking of books set during the heyday of comic book reading, the big finale of Silver Surfer Rebirth from Ron Mars and Ron Lim comes out next week as well. Really looking forward to that.
I really hope the sales on that have been good because I'd like to see him come back and do another.
Yeah, me too.
Definitely.
Now, if you are enjoying the Punisher book from Jason Aaron and, you know, There's a new, I guess, spinoff book, which is a bit concerning that they're, you know, kind of doing a spinoff after issue three. Punisher War Journal Blitz. I don't know if it's a one shot or what, but they, you know, they they're releasing a, you know, a book set, kind of a spinoff of that book, featuring the weapons that were introduced, like the Banner cannon and things like that. Take off of that.
Who's now, doing the artwork on that book?
Lan Medina. I mean, good artist.
I'm gonna have to take a look at the preview pages. I might be interested in that.
I might.
Yeah.
Now from DC Comics, we get new issues of Nightwing as well as Batman the Knight, and we get some Dark Crisis tie-ins in Dark Crisis Young Justice and The Flash issue 783, which continues the Wally West and Kid Flash, whose name I don't remember off the top of my head, searching the multiverse for Barry Allen. We also get the first issue of the new Black Adam series from Christopher Priest and Rafa Sandoval. I guess kind of, you know, it's not a tie into the movie,
right?
But it, you know, obviously probably just puts you in the mood.
But it gives you a Black Adam title out there. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And you also get a one shot. If you were reading the Matt Fraction, Steve Lieber, Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen book, they have a one shot coming out tomorrow, or excuse me, next week. Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen's boss, Perry White. Perry White centric book written by the, you know, written and drawn by the creative team of the Jimmy Olsen book. Sounds like fun. I liked the Jimmy Olsen book.
Same here.
It was a lot of fun.
It's a good book. Well, hey, we want to know what you thought about this week's books. What do you think about Obi-Wan and Ms. Marvel? Give us a call, 972-763-5903. That number, once again, 972-763-5903. If we use your voicemail on the show, you know what? We'll have Paul call you and tell you you're fine.
And I'll do it too.
Oh my God, we're getting so many responses for that.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
What a deal. Well, hey guys, we'll do it all over again next week. And we'll you know what? We'll probably actually go ahead and record next week. You know why? Because it won't be Andrew's birthday.
Fair.
Every day it's not Andrew's birthday, we'll record.
That's right. Oh, I mean, really, my birthday should be a holiday. So I understand. I understand where
this. Right. Right. That was our intent the whole time.
Right. Yeah, it was purposeful.
It was. Yeah. All right, guys. Have a good week.
You too. Bye.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.